Hey everyone, Cecilia Callis here. I am an AI ethicist and the founder and author of Remaining Human, which is a Substack publication and podcast dedicated to exploring how humans might live in harmony with artificial intelligence. I started Remaining Human because I saw the need for a safe space, a safe harbor for people to come and learn about AI, especially as it pertains to how we retain our collective humanity in the face of rapid automation, work displacement, and just uncertainty, right? Because it's a really crazy time. So with Remaining Human, we try to zero in on what is it that makes us truly human and how can we hold on to those things and really take back the power over our technology use and exert that power and use our voices and how it is developed. So there's no better guest for this type of topic and for these type of themes than Tamara Lechner, who is an incredible visionary in the space of human flourishing. Which, if you don't know what that is, we're going to really break it down and get into it for you. But at the heart of her work is this really profound understanding of what makes individuals and organizations and groups flourish. And this might sound kind of broad or vague, but there's actually a science to it and some really exact terms and principles that we're going to get into. And then we'll talk about how AI applies to those principles. But Tamara is the chair of the AI for Human Flourishing think tank within the Harvard Human Flourishing Program. And she's pioneering research into how we can really harness AI to enhance human well-being and potential in this very quickly evolving world. And we need to ensure that we are paying attention to human flourishing and understanding it, especially on an individual level. What makes us feel like we're flourishing? And then how do we become more intentional around using AI to enhance those actions or those feelings? So please join me in welcoming Tamara. She is just incredible in this space, and I encourage you to go follow her work. I'll post her links in the show notes because the conversation could have gone on forever, and I suspect we'll have more conversations from here. There's so much to unpack in this space, so I hope you enjoy. Okay, hi Tamara, how are you doing today?
Hello, I am super duper considering the weather bomb we've had recently in my area of the world. So I'm delighted to be able to join you because I thought I might not have power today.
Oh my gosh, yeah. For both of us, we're sitting in like swirling rainstorms right now. San Francisco too is having all of the sprinkles, and I think it's only going to get worse. So we're nice and cozy inside my little home podcast studio.
Exactly. Embracing some hegi or hyga. I don't know how you say that word, but I feel like I need it today.
Yes, definitely. Okay, well, we are here to, I think hugi could be a form of human flourishing. We're going to talk today about human flourishing. And Tamara's been doing some incredible work in the sphere of how AI actually overlaps with human flourishing, how it can probably help us to live more well, live better, live more in more alignment, but then also how AI poses certain risks to our ability to live well. And I think this is one thing I've talked a lot about in some of my AI salon conversations is well-being. So the concept of human flourishing comes up quite a lot when we're talking about, well, what is well-being and, what does that mean to different people? Because different people have different ideas of what it means to live well as well. But human flourishing kind of provides almost a little bit of a structure, right? That's kind of widely accepted amongst folks. So do you want to talk a little bit about what do we mean when we say human flourishing?
Yeah, I think that is a beautiful place to start because I always like to ensure we're speaking the same language. And when you talk about well-being, we often get it confused with wellness, which can be candles and massages, which I am all for those things. And they're not solutions in a workplace. And AI doesn't usually enhance the ability of those things to help us live our lives and do our best. So when I talk about flourishing, I use a slightly tweaked definition that my AI for Human Flourishing team has decided works well, because a lot of what we talk about is AI in the workplace, but that extends to how you use it at home. And so flourishing really is just the science of how people reach their full potential through both the behaviors and the conditions that lead to optimal performance, fulfillment, and growth. And one of the reasons I started out in the science of happiness, but in different places around the world, you really get a thumbs up or a thumbs down to that word happiness. So happiness may be part of the outcome that you want for your personal flourishing, but for other people, they may say peace, contentment, or they may be hyper-focused on performance and enhancing human performance. That all sits under the structure of flourishing science.
Right. And it has such strong ties to the study of AI ethics as well, right? Like when we think about how we should create AI to benefit humanity, a lot of people say, well, we should create AI to make us happy, or we should create AI to enhance our well-being. And those are two very different things that I think we can, on first glance, say they're similar. But when you actually break it down, it becomes a lot more nuanced. Go ahead.
Yeah, it absolutely is more nuanced. And what's interesting is they're deeply related. So I often hear executives talking about productivity. We want to improve performance. We want to increase productivity. We want to streamline. All of those things are part of flourishing. And we know from years and years of research that many of the best ways to achieve those goals are by ensuring that the humans are resilient and connected to one another, feeling supported. And so it's really a positive upward spiral that when you get it right for the individual, when they're happier, when they're thriving, to use less sciencey words, then work happens in a more productive way, which ultimately impacts the bottom line, which unfortunately in North America is what a lot of us are using as a metric to say, are we successful or not?
Right, right. And in the context of AI, are we seeing people try to use AI to enhance what, flourishing means to them instead of, in a business sense? So I see a lot of different applications of AI. I actually was just at a mental health and therapy, like how AI is impacting that space last night. So that's just, one example of how this technology is reshaping these areas that are integral to our, well-being and flourishing.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you were attending that event. Through the work that I do in AI, I've really explored how using AI can help humans to flourish. And so that can be productivity, right? If we are suddenly able to analyze data in 1/8 of the time that we used to use to analyze data, all of a sudden, we have more of something that is our most scarce resource. We have more time. The real question comes in, what are you going to do with that time? And who owns that time? So if you are a worker and you help your team to figure out a workaround that saves money and time, does this mean you're just going to be more productive and given more to do? Or does that mean you're going to be given some space to breathe and some time to grow and some new things to learn? And so we're working that all out. But I would say, going back to the mental health space, I've had the opportunity to talk with some really amazing founders who have trained AI to do things like recognize if a former drug user has relapsed, and to recognize that with far higher accuracy than a human doctor can. And so things like that do help us to be better through the use of technology. And really, there's no end to what the drivers are around this, but they do sit neatly inside of containers around, are we communicating better? Are we collaborating better? Are we removing bias from our conversation that was hidden to us in the past, but maybe now AI is helping us to see where our biases are. Are we being more productive? That does matter. Can we get stuff done? Can we shave off little bits of time here and there to actually free up more time? So AI is absolutely able to do that. And the reverse is AI can totally suck our attention from what's important if we get caught in an AI algorithm that has learned how to distract us. And so being an educated consumer, and I very intentionally say consumer, not user. One of the first things that I thought about when I heard about AI and technology is that both drug lords and technology leaders call their customers users, and I would love to delete that language because I never want to be used by a technology. I want to be in the driver's seat when I'm using technology. And that's the type of education around the AI and how we as humans stay steering, stay driving is really important in order for us to flourish.
God, that is such an amazing comparison around the using and user. I also try to say consumer to remind people that, you know, this is something we are consuming, even though it feels like a partner or, you know, like a thought partner or a friend now in a lot of cases. But yeah, it's user, especially in social media, which is so addictive. You are using. If you say I use social media, even when people say I'm on social media, that's also kind of a parallel to like, oh, are you
really
on
is.
This drug? Yeah, that's something I've never thought about before. And it's so important to get people to think about these products as, something that they need to be aware of, their usage patterns, especially when it's something like AI that is rapidly becoming so much of like a part of the fabric of our society. I think we're quickly reaching the point where like to roll it back would be more dangerous than to let it, you know, continue. And that like over-reliance and the way we interact with it, so important to consider in the context of human flourishing. And so in your work and this program, what are you guys kind of trying to do here?
That's a great question. So the program is the AI for Human Flourishing Network and Think Tank. And we came together with the idea that in order to understand how AI can help you, we need some type of framework that shows the drivers of human flourishing and connects those to the AI tools that are currently available or that developers might want to make because they're lacking and they could help us as humans. And so we have a large global team who looked at what is the science of flourishing? What is the best practice there? So we considered flourishing models and research from around the world. Then we also looked at what the U.S. Surgeon General was talking about with his recommendations on social media usage. And one of our members, Amy Blankson, runs the Digital Wellness Institute. And we looked at their framework because we could learn from where they got it right and where they had some challenges with their framework. And ultimately, where our framework sits today is we're just releasing it this month. And it's designed almost like a little quiz where you can look at it and it's going to tell you, hey, this is where you're leading and this is where you're lagging. So often we see in an organizational setting, they've placed focus, as they should, on protection from harm. We want to make sure that this is safe for our data, safe for our users. Incredibly, incredibly important. And then the next area that we often see organizations think of is fair AI or responsible AI. Has this LLM been trained on biased information? That is, I heard something from Amazon where the LLM that they trained for their HR team to sort resumes had a weird bias baked into it that if your name was Jordan and you had played lacrosse, you were going to get an interview.
Yeah.
And so something like that,
right,
needs to be thought of by the person who's purchasing or using this AI tool. And so those are two protection areas, absolutely important. But what we wondered as a group is after you've protected the humans, you're only at zero. You're not any better than you started. And why would you go to all of this time and effort to not be better than before? And so we looked at the drivers that we know that the largest driver to human flourishing in an over 80-year research study out of Harvard are our relationships. We all know the feeling of a positive relationship, and we all know the depletion of a negative relationship. And yet, AI cannot replace a human relationship, but it can help us as humans to have better relationships. And I know we've seen AI, like character AI, gone incredibly wrong, where we're trying to solve the loneliness problem by giving you a bot to talk to. And on so many levels, that is not what we're doing with the AI for human flourishing. We're looking at AI as a tool to help us communicate better, to help us talk to one another, not to pull us away from one another and solve our loneliness problem by putting us in a vacuum with the bot that parrots everything that we want it to say and sounds just like us. So we, at the end of the day, hope this to be a tool for knowledge transfer that helps people on an individual level consider, when I use this, is it helping me either to perform better? Do I feel better? Do I understand something I didn't understand before? Have I communicated better with a colleague in another country because we removed a language barrier? So all of these types of things can be assisted by AI, and we just wanted to help people grab the things that build their ability to flourish. And because most people don't know anything about the science of flourishing, but they know when they feel good. They know when they've had a good day at work. They know when they've had a good meeting. We would love to point out the why and say, well, yeah, you led that meeting better because you used Zoom's AI and you learned that you were talking too much and you stepped back and listened more. And wasn't that a much better meeting? That type of work is where we're going with this, but we still have a long way.
Yeah, but I love the vision. And one thing that stands out to me about the approach you guys are taking is the emphasis on the individual and the individual knowing and understanding, A, what flourishing means to them, how AI can uniquely help them flourish. Because as we know, AI is being created with mostly a North American mindset, at least the AI that's being created in this part of the world. And what is human flourishing for someone in the US might be very different for someone who's in Eastern Europe, for example. And even within the same country, we have so many different ideas of what it means to flourish, whether maybe that's someone wants to be more, way more productive, whereas another person is like, I really just want to focus on having a beautiful relationship with my spouse. And so it's that nuance, I think, is so important to talk about with AI, because I'm really wary when I hear AI and tech leaders talk about how the future is going to be from their perspective, right? In this kind of very declaring way, when in reality, we all have choices to make and how we want to relate to this technology. So yeah, great job on focusing on that individual.
Well, thank you. And I think part of the reason we decided to deploy this through organizations was simply it's where you find more individuals. And what we know about flourishing, which is very similar to kind of the plethora of AI tools that are out there, is it's very individual. So if I ask someone what LLM they're going to, are they going to put Perplexity? Are they going to OpenAI? Are they going to Claude? On every tiny shift of the programming, one might be better for me and what I do, but it's not necessarily going to be the same one that's great for you in what you do. The same is true with flourishing. So although we know that having strong positive relationships over time is one of the foundational factors to flourishing, there are so many other things that impact your flourishing, from your health, your financial situation, your burnout level at work. All of these things play a role. And it's just a list of ingredients. It's not a recipe, because there is no one right number of human interactions a day. There is no one right number of deep flow work moments a day. It is very individualized.
Yes, definitely. So individual. And it's truly down to the individual to kind of be able to define your values. And that's something I try to do in some of my work, and a lot of, people working in AI ethics are focused on that. I would love to spend some time talking about some of the risks we might see to human flourishing, because obviously you mentioned the character AI example. There's, in my mind, one of the biggest risks I talk about and think is really important to address now is that we as a species remain empowered, and that we're not giving away our human agency, that we're not outsourcing all of our decision makings and our intuition to AI companions. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about any of the biggest risks you're seeing to human flourishing, and maybe how people might try to become a little bit more cognizant of and just be aware of when they're using AI.
I think what's interesting, inside of your question you almost answered a little bit of it. It's the centering of the human in the loop. And so you may or may not have heard the human in the loop language. We are very curious in the work I do, and this is in my day job where I make money, not as part of the AI flourishing team, in what is the right frequency and dosage of human in the loop. And one of the things that we've noticed is AI has this ability to democratize. And sometimes that can be for the negative, because suddenly you've got this platform for people that maybe don't have expertise, and they can figure out ways to have reach and have status, but not to understand in the same way. And so I guess one thing that I think is very important is not only to think about where you have a human in the loop. And so a great example is looking at nuclear launches. The governments around the world have decided AI alone cannot make that decision, that there needs to be a human in the loop. That's very obvious, right? We need to be safe, and we need a human looking at our safety. But I bet if we said which human, there would be a lot of answers depending on what country you're in, what political party. And so I think we need to get better at asking ourselves what human needs to be in the loop right now, and what skills do they need to have to be that human in the loop. So that's one thing. And then I think anything that takes humans out of the loop. So when we were talking about the character AI, this is something where the LLM it is trained on is designed to keep you coming back. It's winning the more time you spend on it, which means by converse that you're spending less time with humans because you're spending more time with this AI bot. Anything that pulls us away from one another, from a sense of autonomy, from feeling connected, I would say is something that we need to really watch out for. When I'm a mom of four, and when I talk to my children about how to use technology, I always ask them, are you creating or are you consuming? Are you using a product or are you the product? And you and I both know that many of these algorithms are trained to make us the product. Without us being on there, they would not have a thing. I would like to see us spending less time on the things that make us, the humans, a product, and more time on the things that have us using a product. So when you talked earlier about thought partner, I'm trying to shift that language because it can't think, but that is the relationship I want. And I haven't come up. I had in the think tank, we had a session to try to define a better word that decreased the anthropomorphization. That's a huge word. Of
I know
the
technology. I can never say that word. I still need to nail saying that word.
Right? Well, so we don't want to treat technology as though it's human or even human-like, because it simply is not. It's running math equations. And inside of character AI, and I sound like I'm beating up on them, and I'm not, but I've done a lot of research on them recently. They have therapists who trained therapists were told, this is not a therapist. This is a bot. Now have a conversation with this bot. And it was something ridiculous, like more than 75% of the therapists who tried it thought it was really a human. That's wow. How human-like it felt. And I actually don't think that's a good thing. We are easily fooled by something that is telling us what we want to hear. And these therapy bots were not trained in any formal type of therapy. They weren't actually helping the humans, but they felt like they were. And so I think we are going to need to be very cautious if we're looking at guardrails, especially with young people or with fragile people, people who have experienced a mental health dip, people who have been burnt out. Yes, a tool can help them, but you need to make sure they're accessing a tool that can actually help them. And so I think when we talk about policy and governance, we're not there yet. We certainly aren't keeping up to the pace of this technology. We've let go. And yeah. I would like to see there be some really large financial slaps on the wrist to anyone involved in the creation or sharing of technology that is negatively impacting the lives of humans.
I could not agree more. And one quote that's coming to my mind right now is by Asa Raskin, who is the co-founder of the Center for Humane Technology. I saw him speak a couple of months ago now, and he shared, this isn't a direct quote, but he shared something very poignant around, you know, what if we could go back to 2006 or 2007 and ban any business model that profits off of human attention? And then let's flash forward to today. How can we think about banning or, you know, placing regulations around any business model that is profiting or capitalizing off of human intimacy and human relationships? Because that is where we're heading with AI, is the company that can form the most intimate relationship, the deepest connection with these bots and soon to be agents, will ultimately, you know, be winning that market. And I think there's also a really important kind of distinction to make around where things are now and where they could be headed. So, for example, last night at this, you know, event around therapy, AI, they're very much, you know, these people talking about therapy and AI are very adamant, you know, we're keeping the therapists in the loop. We want the best human therapists. We, you know, AI is a tool for them, a tool for the patient, you know, and there are so many amazing applications of that in that process. But he also was talking about, you know, eventually we'll get to a point where the therapist will need to be involved less and less over time. And it's, again, important to remember there are many companies and people right now working on making AI sound more human, understand and be able to replicate human emotion. So right now people say like, oh, it doesn't really get emotion, but there's people working on these problems, right? So trying to have that foresight of like what could come next.
Yeah, I love those thoughts. And the emotion piece is one that I really laugh about, because humans, as two humans talking together right now, I have an emotion and you have an emotion. I might be misinterpreting my own emotion and you might have it right. You might be accurately interpreting what I'm feeling and I'm not. So we have to be able to think about our own emotional experience and then decide, okay, do I want to share this with Cecilia or am I trying to hide it? Mm-hmm. And then you have to think about, okay, the emotion she's showing on her face, is that something she's showing me on purpose or is that something she's let through that I... And so the layers of nuance that come with emotion is going to take a long time for AI to do. And it may be better than us at interpreting facial expressions, tone of voice. In fact, Mathilde Samant is a fabulous designer who's done a brilliant job at helping tone and facial expressions really train you as a human to get across more of what you want to say, which is what I want from AI. I don't want AI to be interpreting me better than I can interpret myself. I want it to help me learn how I can be better understood by the others that I share the planet with, by giving me gentle corrections and helping me. And so I think anytime when I think of AI, it can act like a colleague, which again is making it sound human when it's not. I can bounce things off of it. It can also act as a coach. It can give me subtle corrections and, you know, you sound like this, but your face looks like this. If you want to have those things in alignment, you will be better understood. People will remember what you say more when your voice and your face match the words that are coming out of your mouth. These are scientific things that an AI can coach us on. But ultimately, it's never going to understand the nuance of the human experience. And that is so individual. One of us cries when we're happy. Somebody else yells out when we're happy. We just are far too unique for the LLMs to understand all of those nuances yet. And so I think I'm excited. I've said before, if I could have AI help me with the things I'm very weak at, like facial recognition, if I could wear glasses that would be telling me, hey, that's Cecilia. You met her in San Francisco at the All Tech is Human. I would love that. That would help me to be a better friend to the people that I would love to recognize. And I know I have very bad facial recognition skills on a scientific level. So if I can use something from AI to help me with that, wonderful, but I don't want it to feel my emotions for me. I don't want to offload those things.
Right.
And so it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. I think as consumers, what we need to be really cautious with is what we're outsourcing and what we're keeping. Keep the things that fill your cup. Keep the things that energize you. Don't allow AI to suddenly become a source to make faster the thing that you actually love doing. Because
yes.
then as a human, you'll end up doing more of the things that are hard, that deplete your energy, and less of the things that really fill your cup.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's around, and that's, I think, comes back to, again, like deep individual self-knowledge and self-awareness and just spending the time, if you can. I know we're all pressed for time always, but really spending the time to journal, to go inwards and ask yourself, what brings me joy? What do I want to create? What am I feeling called to do or create? And then even like making lists, right? Like, I don't like doing these things. Like, for me, I'm a writer and creative. I never want to learn how to code. I would be fine if AI helped me create an app of my content one day, right? But I never want to let it write for me, for example. So that's just one example of like how knowing yourself can enable you to truly use this tool as something for beneficial growth.
Yeah, I love that example. And I laugh because so much of what the massive population thinks of AI is actually generative AI.
Yeah.
And it's just one little tiny bit of AI. And I can understand why that feels scary, because it's saying, we're going to do your writing. We're going to create music for you. We're going to generate art. And these are the things that are uniquely human experiences that have huge emotional impact and positive benefit on our health. So if someone thinks all the things I love to do are now going to be done by a robot, and what happened to the Jetsons, where the robots were cleaning for us and cooking for us and doing the things that we actually, most of us, don't want to do?
Yes.
And so I think that really intentional grounding of the, was I more or less productive in using this tool? And sometimes there's a short-term pain for a long-term gain. I'm trying to train a sentiment analysis algorithm right now, and it's taking a lot of time, but I trust that once I get it done, it's going to save me a ton of time. So being really intentional around, yeah, this is a time suck right now, but in the long term, this is going to really help me to offload the things that I don't really like doing. And then making sure that you're choosing use cases. One of the things I do like about AI is that when we first started using it, everybody talked about, well, just play with it. And humans need to play more. And so even though I don't need to use DALL-E to create art, sometimes I have great fun deciding that I want it to make a balloon animal of my Corgi Gatsby in a Christmas outfit. And why not? It felt fun. It gave me a little positive boost. And that is human flourishing supported by AI in a very weird and little tiny way.
Right, right. And that brings it back to AI supporting you and AI helping you create, and not you being used by AI or, you know, becoming this like passive consumer where you have a reliance on it for something like therapy, for example. Because I could see a world, you know, for all of the amazing use cases of a therapy AI tool, which there are so many that they outlined last night. But then also, I think it's like, okay, but what if you get too reliant on it? What if you therefore can't like move through your days or your weeks without it and without this product, which in the end is owned by a corporation and is profiting off of you using that? But I love the emphasis on, yes, just knowing yourself and knowing what you want to use it for. And hopefully one of those reasons is genuine play and joy and laughter. I think that's what we need, all of that. That's what the real incentive should be, I think, in AI creation.
I think so. And you reminded me when you were talking about what the therapeutic AI tools might be able to do, is they're doing what a good therapist would do. And I've seen poor human therapists who keep you in a cycle of, I need to come and talk every single day. And I've had friends who say, my therapist won't let me quit therapy. Like, wait, their job is to teach you the skills and
so
behaviors
true. So
that you get out of therapy. And so I think if we relay what would a good therapist do to what would a good therapy bot do, the best use cases I've seen for therapy bots are they maybe prime you and your therapist. And I think we're often thinking about the patient. But therapists, one of the greatest tools I've seen is therapists work in a bubble. They're by themselves and they have someone who helps them with their difficult cases. But it's very rare for therapists to ever get positive feedback from their work in a meaningful way. And so I know someone who's made a program that actually records the session before the therapist goes into the session. It does a quick look at how their client is doing in that day. So the therapist bot primes the humans, both the therapist and the client. And then it reminds the therapist, this is what you've talked about before. It has a memory that the therapist cannot have. So it pops up information on the side saying, hey, this is kind of like that. Remember when you said this? Which makes them a better therapist. And then at the end of the session, it actually tells them what they did well, which is something therapists do not hear enough of. So even in something where, yeah, the relationship between a human therapist and a human client, super important, that whole process can be made better through the use of AI. We're just not replacing the humans with AI.
I love that. And I love the framing of, is it acting like a good therapist or a good like teacher, for example? I'm even thinking of like students using this, right? Would your teacher just spit the answer back out at you, or would the teacher ask you probing questions to help you come to your own solution? So I absolutely love that framing. I think that's something everyone can take away, is look at the AI you're using and ask if it's acting away a good human, or whatever profession you're using it for would act. Thank you so much, Tamara. This was the most enlightening conversation. You have so much to share. Thank you for doing your work around human flourishing and AI. I think it's one of the most important, if not like the most important areas to be researching as we build and scale this technology at a very fast rate. So thank you so much. And I hope we can have you back on soon. There's so much more to discuss and we barely scratched the surface.
It was a wonderful conversation and I would love to return. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.